So we're here today with Will Delaney. Will's one of my friends. We met through the Crypto Club, and today we're going to be talking about crypto, the state of crypto, and then we're also going to kind of dive into decentralized finance and then some of the implications that censorship could have on both the crypto space, but also on just society and the economy in general.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt.
Yeah, for sure.
Good to be here. So, crypto.
You want to give a brief background on yourself?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, my name is Will Delaney. I'm a junior at Purdue University studying industrial engineering. I'm a part of Boiler Blockchain here, as well as ZBT, which is our fraternity. Got into crypto, I want to say May of 2020. Kind of rode that up to Bitcoin being around 70,000. Got into DeFi and all things alike. Kind of have just been in the space since.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
All right. You want state of crypto?
Let's do it. So state of crypto. So do we want to go over like FTX, kind of some of the market crash that just happened?
Yeah.
And kind of like, where are we, you know?
Yeah. So I think before, like if you look at crypto a year ago, it's very different obviously than it is now. And it's because of those big events that everyone knows of, like the Luna blockchain crash or FTX that crash/hack. Those events really have shaped people's trust in cryptocurrency, and at least from what I've seen, people no longer see it as like a new asset. A lot of people believe crypto is a scam and really lacks that like trust aspect, which rightfully so, right? We've seen billions and billions and billions of dollars time after time again just get taken out of people's hands.
Yeah.
There's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen that reflected in people's ability to, or not ability, but desire to invest in crypto and learn more is just dropped, which
right.
I think in the future will change as some of these regulations and stuff we can talk about later. Mm-hmm. But
and you mentioned the billions of dollars being wiped out of people's hands. Like that happened in two different, like despite two different distinct mechanisms. The first is like, right, I think what you're talking about is how there's been hacks and how people have lost funds because they've been stolen from exchanges. Then the other part is that just the market capitalization of things have been wiped out because people don't trust it anymore. They don't want to keep their money there.
Exactly. Yeah. So like with the FTX crash, I say crash, but that was more of a fraud situation where people had thought that they were using a trustworthy exchange that had partnerships with the Miami Heat Stadium, Tom Brady, all these celebrities alike. It seemed very trustworthy, but in reality, none of what was actually going on was true. And it was pretty much like, it was all fake, right?
The
money wasn't real. It was just a classic case of fraud. Whereas with Luna Terra and that blockchain, it was actually more of a failure of the mechanisms built into Luna, specifically the Terra stablecoin and the Anchor protocol, which was a decentralized application that allowed users to deposit Terra and earn a very high yield, somewhere between, I believe it was 18% at time of crash.
Yeah, it was something crazy. Because I remember looking at it, I was like, there's no way.
Yeah, it was absurd. It was absurd, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought, like, that's an absurd yield. But no one thought that that one DApp would lead to the dissolvement of a $40 billion blockchain, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happened. A hedge fund came in, saw an opportunity to make some money, caused the price of Bitcoin to crash. This hedge fund shorted Bitcoin, so they made money off of that. And if there's a way for someone to make money, they're going to take advantage of it. So it was only a matter of time before that crashed. That really made people distrust stablecoins specifically. And in my opinion, stablecoins are required for the growth of crypto and DeFi and all things alike. So people distrusting stablecoins really kind of put a halt to all of that. And then,
because stablecoins are the backbone in a lot of ways of the crypto, like just the crypto sphere in general.
Yeah, exactly. You can't have a system built around cryptocurrencies that fluctuate in price 20% a day. And that's not as common with Bitcoin, but it used to be more fluctuation was common in the past. Still, you're seeing these massive price swaps that make it almost impossible to build financial applications off of. That's why you need these stablecoins to keep that price stable.
Yeah, it's hard too, because like one of the properties of good money is that good money is supposed to be it's supposed to be able to use money as a medium of exchange.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So it's store value, medium of exchange.
Yeah.
And but that whole facet of being a store of value is kind of not exactly implemented correctly. Like it's not implemented in Bitcoin because it has a free floating price.
Right.
At least in the short term.
Yeah.
But then also that if you don't have a good store of value, that hinders the next property of money, which is being a good medium of exchange.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Yeah. So between those two events, I feel like people all around the world just don't really trust crypto. And we've seen that. We've seen a number of new wallets registered drop significantly. Total locked value in DeFi has dropped. Just the prices of everything have dropped. But I do think that's temporary. I think there are paths for crypto to come back. I think it might not come back in the same sense that people see it as or saw it as. But I definitely still think it's a very relevant technology.
100%. Yeah, I'm with you on that. And there's a cool conceptual model that A16Z has for it. And they talk about the different like seasons.
Yeah.
And there's sort of like this crypto winter, then there's a crypto summer.
Yep.
But during the winter, like the people who keep building, who generate new technology, who find new applications of crypto, they set the stage for the next crypto summer. And at each crypto summer, it attracts new people in that then go ahead and build new applications with new utility, which generates new hype, which brings more people in, which leads to overvaluations, and then the cycle continues.
Exactly. And like,
and that's kind of my conceptual model for it.
Yeah.
You think about it in the same way, sort of?
Yeah, definitely. I think the cycles of like winters and summers, you've seen that in the past. It also is very intertwined with the Bitcoin halving cycle. I think those events, like when Bitcoin halves, can spark a summer, I would say. The DeFi summer of 2020, that's when I really got interested in stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was built, all of those applications were built 2017, 18, 19.
Yeah.
That's what got me into it. And then now here I am during the crypto winter, hopefully doing something important.
Yeah, and I was into it, and I first kind of heard about crypto in 2016, but I didn't actually sort of get super involved until 2017, which is when I started buying. And I experienced the whole, you know, 2018 kind of crash, but I made a promise to myself that I'd stick around and check in on the price of Bitcoin, you know, every week. And, but at that same amount of time, I'd been buying a little bit in 2019, but in 2020 is when I really like, that's when I really doubled down. Spent a lot of time, you know, investing.
Yeah, and once you start going down that wormhole, you like, you realize that there's a lot more than you thought was there.
And then
you come out years later and you're like, wow, okay.
But like, there's so many applications. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of like lost. People are talking about cryptocurrency, but they're looking at it through the lens of, I want to make money.
Yep.
Not through the lens of, where are the actual applications of crypto?
Yeah.
And there's a lot.
Oh, there's so many. There's thousands. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anything that has to do with authentication.
Yep.
Anything that has to do with secure communication, with security, with trust.
Yeah. Anything like, from what I've seen at least, and I do a lot of stuff in DeFi, every kind of application that you think of in traditional finance is being replicated on the blockchain, and also just in traditional life. Like, I've seen people try to replicate kind of like YouTube to make it a decentralized version. There's tons, not tons, but there's a handful of email providers that use ENS domains now, so fully decentralized. We saw Brave, which is a browser. They've kind of built from the ground up a fully decentralized browser to compete with Google, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, I noticed their browser. I've been using the Brave, the Brave browser for a while, but their actual search engine.
Yeah.
I didn't actually know they had a search engine until a few weeks ago. I started using it. Is that when it came out?
So it came out. The search engine came out a couple months ago. I kind of go on and off because there are This kind of brings up another important point. The downsides to centralization and everything being run by one person is that that person has access to everything and very manipulative.
Right.
But it makes stuff run smoother and more efficiently. And it's seen in Google, right? Like, their search engine is amazing because of how much data they have on you and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They can tell you what you want to know.
Right.
With Brave, they don't have access to that data, so their search engine is limited. It also has not been trained the same way Google's has for the last decade. But in the last couple of months, I've seen their search engine get much better.
Yeah.
Much better. And I'm very excited to see the progress.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm happy to use something. I love Google, right? Google's great. But I'm happy to have an alternative as well.
Oh, yeah.
I've always been disappointed with DuckDuckGo, so.
Yeah. No one has the data, which is the issue. So you gotta create a new model to make it work, which is what Brave is working on. I'm very supportive of Brave.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I have to do some research in that area because, as you know, like, I've pivoted a little bit from crypto and I'm trying to do more in e-commerce now.
Right.
And so looking into SEO and...
I know it kind of brings up a random topic, but I'm trying to remember the name. There was a browser before Brave.
Yeah.
It was a decentralized browser. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but the way that they did SEO and marketing was very different. They had a token, and hopefully the name will come to me, but you could stake their token, their browser token, and under a keyword. Hmm. And if you had the most staked under that keyword, your result would pop up first as like the ad.
Oh yeah.
So that was the only way to advertise. Oh, was through
okay,
that.
That's cool.
So,
I like that model.
Yeah, it was totally different.
What how did that work? Like,
so I was thinking about getting into it. I never actually kind of like dove super deep.
Yeah.
But you can buy like a validator and actually run your own search results. So yeah, the same way that like crypto nodes run transactions. Same system, but for a browser. And you can set that up and earn rewards,
yeah,
stake those coins. It's a very similar tokenomics model to a lot of the other stuff we've seen, but made for a browser, which mm-hmm. is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of like other stuff that they're going to start to do with this mm-hmm. kind of technology.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What do you think some of the, like the paths forward would look like?
Yeah. So that's, definitely a harder question.
In crypto in general, there's also like this cliche kind of like model where it's, you know, it was the same thing actually from .com. You just put .com on the end of it.
Yep.
But for crypto, it's like, just do this, but in crypto, you know?
Yep.
What if you could build a bank, but in crypto? And that's been kind of like the model because there's so much stuff happening.
Yeah.
But like the reality is, if you're going to compete with the network effects of Web2 companies, you need to really have some good incentives. Like,
yeah,
where do the competitive advantages for crypto really start to show themselves over some of those traditional like Web2 companies?
Yeah. So I think,
by the way, but the last podcast I did, I've been like putting my cup down on the table and it was like hard to edit out.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. I'll put that on the floor.
Got
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man.
I would say a couple things before we talk about like the paths. One of the big things I'm looking for is for there to be a true Web3 environment, it needs to be all run on Web3. And for the time being, the whole internet is run by Amazon. Not the whole internet, I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of it
most,
is, right?
You can call it majority.
Yeah, Amazon
yes.
Web Service?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And so,
AWS.
In my mind, you really, like, this is all temporary. Like,
okay.
This is not the final stage. It can't be because
it's
just run on a Web2 thing. So, first steps would be, like, there's going to be a company that competes with Amazon Web Service, but Web3. That's what I'm looking for. I think that's, when it comes out, going to be a very good investment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know how that's possible being decentralized. Like,
there's
definitely a lot of gaps.
Full stack internet, full stack decentralized internet.
That's the vision of Web3. Because right now, Web3 doesn't work amazing because it's built on top of Web2.
And depending upon how you like define it.
Yes.
You know, it's like the higher layers of the internet that are, we're decentralizing, but it's still like the servers and.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen a decentralization of the internet before with the Tor browser that was, I believe, made by the CIA.
I think it was just Navy. I thought it was
the Navy. Some sort of American
agency.
Government agency. Yeah. But yeah, so who knows what we'll see in the future. It's definitely going to be interesting. Besides looking for like an Amazon Web Service competitor, I see a couple paths, and obviously, I can't predict the future.
Yeah.
I would not recommend anyone take this as financial advice.
Yeah, not financial advice.
Not financial advice.
Don't sue us, please.
This is just my opinion from what I've seen, but there's like three main kind of trains of thought, and one revolves around what we've seen in China with central banking digital currencies, CBDCs, and that whole kind of rhetoric. It's kind of unclear on what America's stance are exactly on this, but in the last couple of days, I did see some sort of bill go through, an American defense bill, which says a lot, I think, that it's a defense issue now,
mm-hmm.
Talking about the innovations of blockchain, central banking digital currencies and their implications, and all things in between. And it kind of, I haven't had a chance to read it, I'm sure it's very long, but from what I've heard, walks through like a setup structure of this CBDC era, and that would be a very interesting future. I don't want to speculate on what that would look like for America specifically, but I will talk about what that looks like in China. And in China, like right now, this is already in existence. They have the digital yen.
Yeah,
that is their central banking digital currency, and there are some benefits. I think
that already exists. They already have a digital.
Yeah. Okay. This is I think there's over 100 countries that have already looking into or plan, not even plan to, have or are looking into CBDCs, already over 100, and dozens more that are looking in, like going to look into it. So that's the thing I don't think people understand, is like a majority of countries are already looking into this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to fruition, I think it's going to be very quick. People aren't going to realize what happens, and that kind of future will just be set in place with not much resistance. But back to China. So they use some sort of, it's not a full CBDC because they do have the digital or the physical dollar still.
Okay.
But it's the closest we've seen to a functioning system. And people, I'm sure, are familiar with their social credit system. But it does give them the ability to track every single purchase made with that CBDC.
That's really scary, yeah.
Yeah.
And the social credit system is like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's a it's a scary future.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think people like understand, but like Bitcoin is not, it's not anonymous, it's pseudo anonymous.
Yeah.
And so other currencies like ETH as well, they're pseudo anonymous, where you can see people. It's just that the link from the physical world to the digital world doesn't exist.
Yes.
But if you can bridge that, first of all, like, you know everything there is to know about that person, every transaction they've ever done, their balances, you know. But then the flip side to that is, all right, well, you can have a digital identity, which is separated from your physical one. And that's cool. There's a ton of advantages to that. There's ways we can create credit scores that are, you know, better equipped.
More reliable.
More reliable because they have more data to draw on.
Yep. It's an interesting train of thought. But then again, on the flip side, you get
if the real world identities are bridged to the blockchain, that's where I think.
I think that gap is already made. Like, you see, YouTube is like CoffeeZilla. Like, the second a big scam comes out, like, you can get to the bottom of it. And there's already websites. I don't know the name again, but there's a website out there that you type in one wallet address, and it will go through every transaction and make a map of all the wallets you've interacted with. And so you do that, bam, your entire blockchain history is right there.
Yeah.
You just gotta connect one of those to a centralized exchange, bam, you're identified. So it's really not that hard right now.
Gotta be careful about Tornado Cash.
Yeah, and that, we can talk about that later, but it'll be interesting, because I know in China, if you use your money and gamble, the government will see that. And
is gambling allowed there? Or?
Gambling's allowed, but I don't know 100%.
Okay,
but I know people gamble, everyone gambles. Not everyone gambles, but people do all across the world, everywhere.
Yeah.
And I know that like that's a activity that's seen poorly by society, and so it'll actually impact your social credit score. So that's how they link like your financial transactions to like your real life. Low enough social credit score, you can't leave the country, you can't travel on planes, stuff like that. So that's one path. If you want to learn more, see what's going on in China. I think that's probably the best way to see that.
Yeah. One way that I've kind of thought about this is like, I kind of imagine, sometimes I'll articulate a particular conceptual model or a framework to explain something, but I'll explain it like in my own words, from my own experiences. And just with like finance in general, I've always seen finance as a mechanism for communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different kind of communication than like language or mathematics, but it does allow you to like articulate things, but though that articulation can create like, it's like a form of power almost.
Yeah.
Where you can do things and that has a realized effect.
Right.
Instead of just transferring like information, you're transferring like economic value.
Yeah.
And cryptocurrency in general, I see that as a way to, you know, create a new way of financial communication that's secured by like cryptography and that has all of the rules and properties of good money, of good economic exchange. The thing is that that we could create like systems that know so much about you and about what you can do that you could create like omnipotent sort of agencies where they just like, they know everything there is to know about you and they become like all powerful because of that knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's all captured by the internet. And so like, for me at least, this idea of privacy, this idea of security, one of the ways which security is realized is through privacy is super, super important.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Like, there's some real dystopian futures
yeah.
that we could realize if we're not careful about being conscious about the ways we selectively reveal ourselves to, yep. to go to Eric Hughes.
Yep. But yeah, got to be careful in that kind of area. Mm-hmm. So besides that kind of future, what are some of the other options? One thing I want to highlight would be a future where like our traditional financial system is kind of continuing down this path, right? The American dollar fiat system remains the world's international monetary reserve. But something weird might happen with Bitcoin specifically. In a couple of years, I think they're going to get ready for a smart contract layer after all this stuff with the Lightning layer is figured out.
And we have the Taproot upgrade.
Yeah, the Taproot. Is that smart contract?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Smart contracts on Bitcoin.
Is it fully launched yet?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, I'll have to check. I didn't think it was from when I talked to Andrew last.
Okay.
But regardless, I think a rise of Bitcoin smart contract applications, dApps, could be in the future.
My bad. Maybe it was finished or like part of it was implemented.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Not super important.
Okay.
I could see it rising in the future. It doesn't exist right now, I don't think. The specific dApps. So what I'm thinking of is right now, decentralized finance is run on Ethereum.
Right.
Everything else is a knockoff of Ethereum and how they're running it. Not a knockoff, but it's based around Ethereum.
So like the different smart contract platforms, so things like Sol and Apex and whatever.
They're
real big on the proof of stake type stuff.
Yes.
And the issue with that is that we're moving away from like a meritocratic sort of like more individualistic, resource intensive, like meritocracy.
Yeah.
Where
Solana has hypernodes, I believe, 32 of them. Maybe super nodes, super valid, whatever the word is. But they're like set apart from the rest.
Yeah.
They control a majority of it. So it's Solana's pretty centralized. Ethereum, they've gotten cracked down in the future or in the past with Tornado Cash. But Bitcoin is...
Well, not Ethereum, but like some of the dApps on Ethereum.
Yeah, I would classify that as Ethereum getting cracked down too, though. The stuff under Ethereum, like...
What do you mean by that?
So, yeah, I guess if you take a step back...
Because I've always thought of Ethereum as being fairly decentralized.
Okay, so...
I understand, like, with POS, there's been some controversy around that, but I don't really understand that. So what...
So it's not necessarily centralized, but the hands of a centralized authority are very much in Ethereum and anything that comes under it. And so under it would be Aave, all of those dApps, right?
Like Uniswap.
They all exist on the other blockchains now, but in my mind, they started on Ethereum.
Right? Yeah.
They all did.
Yeah.
So if you, let's say, bought $100 of some stablecoin and washed it through Tornado Cash,
right?
That's worthless now. Like you can't use that anywhere. That crypto, because it was washed through Tornado Cash and your address was added to a list, Office of Financial Affairs Regulations, I'm not sure the exact abbreviation, and this list keeps track of everyone and all the money, and it's all bad money, like laundered. So to me, like, there's already a centralized authority pretty much overwatching everything that happens on Ethereum. And so if DeFi progresses, the rise of DeFi, decentralized finance would lead to the downfall of a centralized authority. In my mind, the number one centralized authority for monetary policy is the Federal Reserve in America.
Right.
Because the whole world runs on the American dollar.
Yeah, petrodollar standard.
So who stands to lose the most? Federal Reserve. So rise of DeFi, fall of the Federal Reserve. They're not going to let that happen. So if they can stop it, they will.
But couldn't they just create like a CBDC?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why that kind of scenario was...
More probable.
More probable.
In your mind?
I could see that being a pretty, like, I list that as my number one.
I definitely see that as being very probable.
Especially after, like, the last couple of days with that defense bill. I could see if I could get the name of that.
One more thing. So Bitcoin uses UTXO model. So UTXO, unspent transaction output. But each coin's, like, unique.
Yeah.
In some sense, they're fungible, but they're unique. At least in terms of the transaction history.
Yeah.
For ETH... If I'm not mistaken, ETH runs on an account-based model, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're blacklisting people based on the addresses, so they see it came from Tornado Cash to this address. But how do they blacklist the coins? Are they blacklisting the coins or the addresses?
Yeah. So it's the addresses that touch the coins and also like those coins too. I'm not sure the specific mechanics, but like
okay.
you can have like bad Ethereum that has been washed through Tornado Cash, and you can't really like.
Really?
I'm not sure the exact. Again, I've never done this. Okay. This is not an issue that I personally face.
You're innocent.
Yes. But there's a. I'm not sure if you have those coins, yeah. will it turn your wallet bad, or if you just won't be able to withdraw those coins. But there's some sort of something like that.
Okay, so it's either the wallet or it's the coins, yeah, or something in between.
I want to say it's both.
Okay. I'll have to do more research because I don't, from my current understanding of ETH, I don't understand how the coins would be able to be flagged, because I thought it was an account-based model.
Yeah.
So I could see how they could do it with addresses, but the...
I think it has something to do with...
Is it like USDC or it's like ETH?
USDC.
Okay. Because USDC, I could see. I know.
That's what it is. So because it's run by Circle, that's centralized. USDC, very easy.
USDC is backed by FDIC, right? It's FDIC insured. USDC is?
Some of it is. Derivative on the Ethereum blockchain. Something weird. There's something weird because like, it's the same with BUSD. If you have BUSD on the Ethereum blockchain, that's issued by Paxos, which is FDIC insured.
Oh, okay.
But BUSD on every other blockchain, including Binance, is not the same. It's a derivative.
Binance Smart Chain?
Yeah. That only is real, like, it's real everywhere, but insured on Ethereum.
Interesting, okay.
But yeah, back to like the past of the future. So you got the Bitcoin one, the second one that we're talking about right now, the rise of like a Bitcoin DeFi kind of era, just because it's harder to censor and stop than Ethereum is.
Right.
And that would kind of just look like more and more people using that, less people using other traditional finance systems. A third kind of path would be some sort of, have you read the book Ray Dalio's Changing World Order?
I haven't seen the book, but I saw his YouTube
video. Yeah, I watched the YouTube video as well.
I read Principles.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, it's great. Some sort of event like that, I can't even begin to predict what it would look like, but...
Some sort of black swan.
Yeah, and something that would cause the U.S. dollar to fall a lot. There's a lot of conflict in the world, so it's not an unreasonable thing to think. Ukraine-Russia war. I believe there's like five or six countries, South America, or South Africa, Brazil is one of them, I think, that are banding together to try to rival the U.S. dollar with some sort of joint currency. That event would also classify as like a black swan, something like that. China, obviously, like their economy is growing. I think they're only a couple, I don't know how many trillion behind GDP, but
it's a lot.
I want to say it's like 4 trillion behind us, five. I think they're at like 16 and we're at like 21.
Wow. Okay.
At least from something I saw recently, I don't know if the chart.
So they're catching up.
Oh, 100%. But I mean, that's not to say China does not have issues right now. Their housing market is a mess. They've got issues. They've got issues for sure. Same as us. Same as everyone. But yeah, besides those three paths, like something in between, both, one.
For me, the most probable is that we have one. It could be USD, like, you know, like digital dollar, Bitcoin, whatever. But then we kind of just have like a power law distribution of other chains that are used. And that's just kind of like the Pareto distribution, but like the Pareto principle kind of implemented in this area.
Yeah, I definitely think other chains will emerge, new ones that we can't think of yet. Some will probably stick around. Same thing with the internet.com bubble. Very similar, but it will be different in some senses because regulation is very different in terms of financial stuff. There was a lot of regulation issues in the beginning of the internet, no doubt. So maybe looking to the past will give us some of the answers. I haven't looked at regulation on the dot-com bubble crash, but
yeah,
I'd be curious to see
kind of how that comes to fruition.
If anything kind of happened that led to certain companies going under or anything like that.
So what else?
I'd say another big like thing of crypto that you're gonna see is education. I know Texas, the major, I'm not sure exactly that.
Texas is cool. I was talking to my friend about.
Yeah, one of the Texas universities, might have been AM, just launched their first like Bitcoin class for credit at the university, accredited. So you'll start to see cryptocurrency kind of like roll into curriculum, and people will start to like understand that Not to mention,
by the way, if you go to Purdue,
perfect transition.
We wrote a whole course on non-technical blockchain.
Yep.
We're going to be teaching it this semester. If you haven't signed up and you go to Purdue, go ahead, sign up. You get a certificate in non-technical blockchain.
Yep. So it's not for credit. That hopefully is in the future, but for right now, it's just a certificate. It's going to start in a couple weeks, but it's fully student developed by people in Boiler Blockchain.
Yep.
Student led, student taught.
Yep. It'll be good. Me, you, Ian. Andrian,
yeah,
it's be the best course. I promise you, if you come, these lectures they'll be incredible.
It'll be good.
Yeah,
I'm excited. But yeah, I think that's. I don't know if I have anything else to talk about.
Yeah. Bro, I think that was it.
Awesome.
That was a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for having me again.
100%. I'll again. We'll be working together over the course.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, we can have some more guests on in the future.
Definitely, I'd love to be back at some point.
Absolutely.
Thank you, man.
All right. See you.